As wild animals have adapted to our growing cities and towns, more and more humans are encountering wildlife in their own backyards. This time of year, that means a lot of people come across baby wild animals. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife rehabilitators call spring baby season. The phone rings off the hook and facilities fill up with orphaned and displaced wild babies. This hour, I'm going to talk to three licensed Iowa wildlife rehabilitators, including Linda Nebbe of the Blackhawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project, Jodine Cancilla of the McBride Raptor Project at Lake McBride Nature Center, and Marlene Ayersman, director of the Iowa Wildlife Center. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This time of year, wild animal mothers are either expecting or busy caring for new offspring. Nature isn't always kind, and neither are humans or their cars. Sometimes things go wrong, and when people find injured, orphaned, or displaced wild animals, they call wildlife rehabilitators. We're going to spend the hour with three licensed Iowa wildlife rehabilitators. Later in the hour, Marlene Ayersman, director of the Iowa Wildlife Center near Boone, will join us. Right now with me is Linda Nebbe. She's been caring for wild animals for 38 years, which is almost as long as she's been my mother. She lives near Cedar Falls and is part of the Blackhawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project. Hi, Mom.
Hi.
Thanks for being here today.
Oh, delighted.
Jodine Cancilla is also in the studio with me today. She is program coordinator of the McBride Raptor Project at Lake McBride Nature Center, which is near Solon. Hello, Jodine.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we will talk about what you should do and should not do if you find a wild creature that has been injured or displaced as the hour goes on. But I want to talk more about you guys today. And Mom, I want to start with you. I said you've been caring for wild animals for 38 years. So let's go way back in time. How did that start?
You ask complicated questions. When I was a little girl, it was the game I played in my backyard with my dog. I was an only child. She was my sibling. And our game was that we lived in this beautiful forest where all sorts of unwanted and abused animals and children came. Then they loved each other and lived happily ever after.
Okay.
So after that, actually, I was a school teacher. I was teaching in Ogden, Iowa, and I ended up with a small pig in my classroom. It was awesome. It was an orphan, a runt, and I learned something. I thoroughly enjoyed having it there, raising it. The next summer, because our picture was in the newspaper, it was a slow news year, we ended up getting over 40 bottle babies from farmers nearby. And I learned that with livestock, there's one end in Iowa. And I didn't like that end. So,
these bottle babies, uh-huh. These were runts that the farmers would have disposed of.
Their little lambs.
Of, right.
Yes, their little lambs.
They weren't going
pigs.
To make it.
Exactly.
And of course, farmers didn't want that to happen either. So mm-hmm. they were giving them to you
yeah.
to raise because
right.
they didn't want to just leave them to die. But
correct.
All right. So how did you get the idea about raising wild animal babies?
Read an article in the Des Moines Register about somebody who did this with raccoons. And I thought, wow, what a neat thing. At the end, when they're mature, let them be wild and free. And so I asked a conservation officer about it. And he said, absolutely not. It's illegal. It doesn't work. And 3 weeks later, he brought me a clutch of baby raccoons.
Back then, you couldn't become a licensed wildlife
no.
rehabilitator.
Such a thing did not exist.
So how did that evolve?
I think about it, I think that there were people doing it all along. You know, you found a baby bird, you knew the lady on the block or the person to take something to that always took care of them. And I think just early 80s, we all came out of the closet. We said, hey, we're doing this. And there were two national organizations that were started, and states followed along with laws and licenses.
All right. So you became a licensed Iowa wildlife rehabilitator. Mm-hmm. And then a little later on, you also became a licensed federal
correct.
Wildlife rehabilitator. And what's the difference between being licensed in Iowa and having a federal license?
Well, having a license in Iowa means that you can work with native animals that are native to Iowa that are wild. And if you want a federal permit, you have to have some experience to begin with, which would be your state permit. And that basically targets migratory birds or animals that would be considered endangered or special situations.
All right. And I think when a lot of people hear about what you do and they mm-hmm. read about you in the newspaper and things like that, they think, oh, I want to do that for my job. So I think we should clarify. You said you were a school teacher back then, but
that's
being
right.
a wildlife rehabilitator has never actually been your job.
No, it hasn't. Never a job. I've been a volunteer, and the organization that I work with now is we're all volunteers.
All right. And
most wildlife rehabilitators, we used to call us backyard rehabilitators. We're all volunteers.
All right. Now, Jodine, I see you nodding your head along.
Good. I'm glad she agrees.
Right, yes. To Mom's Story. And as I mentioned, Jodine is the program coordinator at the McBride Raptor Project at Lake McBride Nature Center. Jodine, how did you get involved in this?
Well, I've always been interested in wild animals and animals in general. And when I was going to school back in the college days, I started volunteering for the McBride Raptor Center. At that point, that's what it was known as. And when I graduated from college, I was offered a part-time position. And the rest, as they say, is history. So I've been with it ever since. And I'm one of the fortunate rehabilitators in that it is my full-time job.
And what kinds of animals do you work with at the Raptor Center?
We work predominantly with birds of prey. However, we do assist with any other type of bird that might come through and need some assistance in the area.
All right. And Mom, you talked about that first clutch of baby raccoons. Mm-hmm. Give us an idea of the wide variety of critters you take care of.
Are you talking to Jodine or
no,
to me?
No, you too.
Oh, to
you.
Me? We take everybody. I was one of the founders of Blackhawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project, and we're non-speciesist. We are for this is a choice that we've made, but that means that we are open to anybody that comes to us. And we chose that first because who are we to decide who's important or not? Once there were billions of dodo birds and passenger pigeons, we don't know what tomorrow brings. But the other reason is that often the person who saves the sparrow or the bunny is just feels the same passion for it as if it's been a hawk or an owl. So we feel that it's really important that everybody has an opportunity to experience helping the animals.
Well, I think that brings up an interesting idea. Mm-hmm. Because when you first started doing this, it was because the animals were neat and you
yeah.
really wanted to. And I think that's how most people get involved
exactly.
in wildlife rehabilitation.
And I had very small children and I wanted them to experience it too.
Which was a tremendous benefit. As time went on, I mean, and when I was growing up, of mm-hmm. course, I had a sort of a simplistic idea, but I really felt like saving every individual animal was very important.
Mm-hmm.
And as time goes on, you look around the world and you think, okay, what difference does it make to save this clutch of baby raccoons?
And what the research shows, at least for high population animals, no difference at all.
All right. So why mm-hmm. is it important to
That's
you?
That's another complex question. Professionally, I was a psychologist, a therapist, a teacher, and I was fascinated by the animals to start with, like you said. I loved working with them, but I love behavior. And it doesn't matter if it's a human behavior or animal behavior. It's kind of a large continuum. But as time went on, I really became interested in the connection between the two, between the animals and between people and the rest of the environment, and how important that connection is. And I mean, research now really supports the fact that humans involved with animals in nature actually are healthier, happier, and have stronger immune systems and smarter. So I look at the whole picture. Usually when an animal's in need, it's a story, and it's a story that has a human being or human beings in it as well. And these stories, I think, are real important to me. And because of the stories, so often they give us an opportunity to give the human being a chance to be compassionate, to feel like they've made a difference, to do something that they feel is worthwhile instead of just watch, for example, the animal suffer. Also, it's an opportunity to give them an understanding of the relationship and the opportunity to be neighbors on our planet. So that's just a really exciting part of what we do, is that enabling or inspiring people to understand and appreciate, to see the awe and wonder that exists with the animals that we share the planet with.
And you spend a lot of your time educating children, Jodine. I know you spend a lot of your time educating children as well, and that's an important part of your work. But, Mom, you spend a lot of time educating adults, too, and this is sort of, I mean, guerrilla education. You do it one person at a time. So tell me one of your stories. I mean, yesterday you told me you were at a construction site. Tell me what happened.
Well, at the construction site, and I don't think this would have happened, say, 20 years ago, but they were removing a brush pile where they were going to build a house, and they came across a clutch of baby raccoons, and one of the men from the construction site finally got in touch with me about 2:30 in the afternoon. He was done working at noon, and he said, "We just don't know what to do." And I said, "Well, we need to assess the situation first. It may be that we can leave them there, and Mom will come back and continue to take care of them." It was thankfully not too far from our home, so I went out there, and that's what we did. We took the babies for the rest of the day, rehydrated them, took them back in the evening, and put them exactly where the nest had been. In this case, no mama came back, so they are now part of our rehab group. But often, the mother does come back, and she moves her babies. The mothers in nature are tenuous. They work very hard at being parents. And but as I went to get the babies, there was a whole group of about 8 construction workers standing around, smiling. It was just like they were, you know, proud papas or something. That good. We found something that we can do that's constructive with these little guys, and that felt good.
Over the years, you've encountered a lot of people who were unlikely to be animal rescuers.
Oh yeah,
but they do get really invested in the lives of the creature or creatures that they find.
Another really short story. One night at 1 o'clock, there's a knock on our door. And when I went, it was a gentleman holding a fawn. The fawn was sucking on his ear, and tears were streaming down his face. And I took the fawn, and I asked him the story behind it, and I asked him his name. He said, "I can't tell you my name." And he said, "I was out fishing with my hunting buddies, and we found this fawn, and we left it there for nature to take its course." He said, "But every time I've closed my eyes the rest of the day, I see that fawn. I couldn't leave it." And so he had brought it, and, you know, in his own way was very compassionate and caring. But, yeah, it's very interesting, motivations.
We're going to take a very short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about wildlife rehabilitation. My guests, Linda Nebbe, who is my mom. She's also a licensed wildlife rehabilitator and has been for nearly 40 years. She's part of the Black Hawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project. Jodine Kinsella is program coordinator of the McBride Raptor Project at Lake McBride Nature Center near Solon. And Marlene Ayersman will join us later in the hour. She's director of the Iowa Wildlife Center near Boone. You're welcome to join the conversation as well with your questions at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about wildlife rehabilitation, and I have 3 licensed Iowa wildlife rehabilitators with me this hour. Marlene Ayersman of the Iowa Wildlife Center near Boone will join us in just a few minutes. Right now, Linda Nebbe, my mother, is here. She's also been a licensed wildlife rehabilitator for more than 3 decades. She's part of the Black Hawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project. And Jodine Kinsella is program coordinator of the McBride Raptor Project at Lake McBride Nature Center near Solon. And now, Jodine, my mom's done, I can't count how many school programs, preschool programs, vacation Bible school programs, nursing home programs, those kind of things. But you, I mean, education has been a very important part of what you do. And now people can actually visit your center.
Yes, that is correct. Our hours are currently 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., 7 days a week. So we never close, although we might shorten our hours a bit.
But you've also, through your affiliation with the University of Iowa, you've also been a part of a huge project with the summer wildlife camps. Tell me about those.
Well, we've been very fortunate, the McBride Raptor Project, to be associated with the University of Iowa and Kirkwood Community College. And we developed probably about 15 years ago now summer wildlife camps. So kids from kindergarten through sixth or seventh grade can come out and spend a week with us. They go home in the evenings, but they spend a week, and they're immersed in the outdoors. They can carry phones, but the phones have to be off, so there's no game playing or anything of that nature. It's all just get out there and get dirty, and we send them home at the end of the day pretty tired and pretty dirty, but I think they all truly enjoy it.
Now, for you, we were talking about, of course, the individual animals, but also that human element.
Right.
Tell me what motivates you.
Well, I've had this discussion with biologists in the past, and they always say, you know, what good does it really do to rehabilitate one red-tailed hawk or one great horned owl? And I think if you ever had a child come in with their family and bring you this injured red-tailed hawk or this injured great horned owl, and you look in their eyes and you know, they are immediately attached to this animal and they want to know if you're going to be able to help it. They don't want to think of the other end of it. They just want to know that you're going to try to do the best that you can. And how can I look at that child and honestly say to them, you know, red-tailed hawks are a dime a dozen. You know, this is my 300th red tail for the year. I never say that because each individual bird matters, and it matters to that particular child or family that bring it in. And I don't think it would be sending a very clear message if we didn't respect that and treat that animal and that individual as what they're going through and try to deal with it. The outcomes aren't always great, and people understand that. As long as you promise to try to do everything that you can to help that animal and give it the best chance you can. And a lot of times we are successful, and I think that's the really gratifying point.
Now, as far as the service that you provide goes, I mean, this is it falls into really a gray area. It used to be that conservation officers and humane societies would get all of these phone calls about wild critters and didn't have a lot of good choices, didn't have the resources to care for them. And then wildlife rehabilitators came along and suddenly they had a better choice. And so I know, Mom, many of the animals that you have worked with over the years have come through the animal shelter or from a vet clinic or from a conservation officer. But now there's a more immediate connection because this is higher profile and people know to call you. But I would love to hear from both of you on this. I mean, Jodine, the public calls your center directly. And I think people sort of feel like this is a public service that they're entitled to have at their disposal. But how difficult is that to cope with all of those phone calls?
Well, at baby bird season, it sometimes you wonder if the phone's ever going to stop ringing. But you take each call as it comes and try to work with the individuals. We never request any funding for the work that we do. We try to do the best that we can with the resources that we have available and help them out, each individual animal. And so it can be quite challenging at times. I'm pleased to say that in the time that I've been doing this, we have not been not had to turn an animal away. So I think we're on the right track in being able to do that, do the best that we can for each animal. And if we do get calls, and we do receive many calls on mammals and, you know, reptiles and amphibians, we do try to work with the individuals and right or rectify the situation if we can over the phone or maybe a visit to the site. And if all else fails, we have our friends in Blackhawk County that will assist us. And so we work very closely with other rehabilitation groups in the area.
Now, Mom, you're in a different situation because, of course, this is your home. It's
yes.
your home telephone number. And over the many years, you've had to sacrifice, and your family as well.
Yes.
A lot of privacy
right.
because of this. I mean, kind of describe the phone calls and the people who show up in the driveway.
Well, we have, or in our house, we have a hotline number, and we get a lot of calls, especially this time of year with orphan babies around. We try to help people too on the phone if we can. There's a lot of re-nesting and just teaching people about the animal and that it's okay. The possum is not going to live on their porch. It'll leave very soon, and they'll be just fine. But people do just drive up the driveway, and at all times. And you may mention the word entitled. I do think it's become that way. After they find out we're just volunteers, they're a little bit more understanding. But people do come all the time, and sometimes it's overwhelming. It's almost more than you can handle. It's just constant all day. And, you know, like Jodine said, the calls come in just rapidly all the time.
So, again, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And also, I mean, Jodine, this is part of your work, but... Again, I mean, people do give donations to the Black Hawk Wildlife mm-hmm. Rehabilitation Project, although for many years there was no project. No. It was just you.
Right.
And, I mean, over the years, our family has spent, I would guess, hundreds of thousands of dollars on
We've
this.
Tried not to count.
I think that's wise.
That's very wise.
Thank you. Plus, it's a 24-hour-a-day job.
True.
So describe a day right now. You've got how many baby raccoons in the back porch?
I'm not sure. Let's see. There were more yesterday. I think close to 15 or 16, three baby fox. I've had a few that, unfortunately, a lovely beaver and a little sparrow that didn't make it. That would be within the last 2 days. There's been those critters.
All right. You also have long-term residents.
I do. Educational owls and that we use in educational programs.
And that you also have an educational license to keep. So
true.
When does your day start caring for animals?
I'm so lucky because I do have some wonderful interns and volunteers, basically from you and I or the colleges around here. But I was telling them my schedule the other day, and they said, well, do you get up with the raccoons at night? I said, no. But my last feeding's about 10 o'clock, and my first feeding's at 4.
So you kind of do.
they just looked at me and laughed. But then they get to come in for the 8, the noon, the 4, and the 8 one.
All right. Well, I'm talking today with, right now, two licensed Iowa wildlife rehabilitators, Linda Nebbe and Jodine Kinsella. And you're welcome to join our conversation with your questions and your comments mm-hmm. at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll get to the phones in just a second. But here's the information that I know that both of you give to people all the time. If you come across an injured or displaced wild animal, what do you do? Mom?
Okay, first, our directions include that they assess the situation. They look around. If they know where there's a nest that's close by, if it's a baby bird, or even a bunny, another kind of animal, put it back in the nest. And that belief that if parent animals smell humans on their babies, they'll no longer take care of it. That's an old wives' tale. Even though people all over the world believe it, it's not true. So get that baby back in the nest, even a fawn. Leave it where it is. Mom's going to be coming back. Sometimes she has to go off and eat, and she'll be back, but it might be 6, 8, 10 hours before she comes back. So that's step number one. If they believe that it's orphaned or injured or there's a problem, call us. And we'll assess the situation and talk it through with them. Sometimes the nest has fallen down. They can put up a fake nest. They use a Tupperware dish with holes in the bottom so the rain goes through, or a basket, and put it kind of under some leaves in a tree in a safe spot as near to the nest as they can get it, and then watch and determine, are the parents still taking care of the baby? So those are the kind of things we talk to them about, and hopefully, and more we're doing more of the re-nesting and the leaving in their environment successfully, and that's really exciting.
All right, Jodine, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think we follow pretty much the same thought pattern there.
All right, so most of the time, leave it alone.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
All right, to sum up. All right, let's go to the phones, 866-780-9100. Jennifer is on the line in Toddville. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, I had a quick comment and a question.
Okay.
My comment is that my family, after visiting the McBride Raptor Project, decided to enjoy some owls that were living in their backyard instead of not enjoying them, because they had been waking them up, but now they're having fun taking pictures of the babies in the trees. So
oh, good.
That's wonderful.
That's a really positive
yes.
experience. But my question is that I heard a comment about speciesist earlier, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering if Jodine feels as though there is maybe some advantages to being a specialized rehabilitator.
Well, I think we do try to assist as many other types of wildlife calls that we get and get those animals on to the correct people who have the proper housing. What it comes down to for us is food needs, caging needs, housing, all of those types of things. And it's just become a bit easier for us to have housing for raptors, because if you have songbirds nearby, they're potentially in their heads could be eaten by the predator. And so it's just become easier to really isolate and send those types of animals on to somebody who really deals with them, has the correct type of housing needs, and allows us to just sort of concentrate on the birds of prey. But they're all equal. They're all very important. They are each a member of the food chain in the world that we live in, and no one is more important than the other.
Jennifer, thank you for your call. And Jody, I mean, specializing in raptors, raptors take different types of facilities, plus they take a lot of different knowledge. I mean, taking care of a mammal is very different from taking care of a raptor. So I know that often wildlife rehabilitators all over the state bring raptors to you.
Well, and we're glad to help anybody that has a question or needs a chance to give them some more room to fly in.
Mm-hmm.
But they do require some differences than perhaps songbirds. Certainly, much wider and bigger facilities to be able to fly in and retrain themselves, as well as a diet that is sometimes hard to come by. And my mother,
who's and very expensive,
yes, who's probably listening now, will remember early on when we would go out when I was starting out and scoop up roadkill and put it in the back of the car to help feed the raptors. And so she never lets me forget that. Fortunately,
I never let my mom forget all the time. She made me do the same thing.
Yeah, so there are some things that you have to do.
It's very glamorous.
Well, and the good thing about the specialization, even though we take raptors, if we have something we can't handle, we can send it, you know, to the McBride Raptor Center, because they know a lot more about it than we do. And we call and ask questions a lot.
Well, and thinking about the 30 years that I've really been, mm-hmm. Aware of what's going on, the amount of information about how to care for these creatures has just exploded. And the access to that information, of course, with the internet has exploded as well.
And it's different for every single one.
Right. Every animal requires something different, mm-hmm. and somebody who really knows and can fine tune and tweak that to help the animal to the best of their ability.
All right. And Terry is on the line in Redfield. I think this is someone that you guys probably are familiar with. Hi, Terry.
Oh, hi.
Hi. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Good. Well, I'm in Dallas County, and I'm a rehabilitator, and I've been a rehabilitator for probably 20, 30 years. And I just wanted to add a little bit that we really need to get it out there that we could use more rehabilitators. There's just not enough people to help. I mean, if you have a lot of interns and people to help you from Iowa State or something like that, that's great. But out here in the small places, there just isn't very many.
And I might add, in the list of rehabilitators that the state has, there used to be over 3 Excel spreadsheets of names of people that were licensed. Now there's about 1 1/3 names on that spreadsheet.
Right. Yep. And I've been trying to sponsor. I've sponsored several people in Polk County, Bourne County, Dallas County, trying to get more people to help. And it's been pretty good. But we have just now started nonprofit network, the Wildlife Rehabilitation Network of Central Iowa, and we're trying to get our name out there so that we can get people to understand about what to do with animals also.
Oh, that's fabulous. It really is needed, very needed. Yes. I commend you for that.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah. We're doing our best we can.
Terry, thank you so much for your call. And we are going to talk more about the future of wildlife rehabilitation as the hour goes on. Let's go back to the phones. Troy is on the line in Attalissa. Hi, Troy.
How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
My question is in regards to the release of these animals. Do you guys have certain areas? I know there's obviously a lot of choices. I was just curious as to where these animals are released.
All right.
If it's somebody needs to release a beaver, I have a pond.
Good.
That's good to know.
Usually they decide where they want to go eventually by themselves.
Right.
We try when it's warranted, and I know Jodine will do this too with the raptors, to take them back where they came from. And we do it because they know their territory, and they have family structures that are important to them. Many of them, you can't take them back to the middle of Waterloo or Cedar Falls. So we try to find appropriate release sites where it will be acceptable and they'll have a chance to thrive and survive.
And just 30 seconds, do you have anything you want to add to that, Jody?
No, we also try to get the animals back to where they came from. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not possible because of the reason they came to us. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were shot or some other issue, poisoned, and so we'll look for another suitable home.
All right, and you also do look for volunteers who have places to release animals,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
All right, so Troy should find someone nearby and let them know. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're talking about wildlife rehabilitation in Iowa this hour. With me, Linda Nebby. She's a licensed wildlife rehabilitator from outside of Cedar Falls, involved with the Blackhawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project. And Jodine Cancilla is program coordinator of the McBride Raptor Project at Lake McBride Nature Center, which is near Solon. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebby. This hour, we're talking about wildlife rehabilitation in Iowa. With me, Linda Nebby, who is my mother. She is also a licensed wildlife rehabilitator and has been for 38 years. Jodine Cancilla is here. She's program coordinator of the McBride Raptor Project at Lake McBride Nature Center near Solon. And now Marlene Ayersman is here. She's director of the Iowa Wildlife Center near Boone, which broke ground in 2011. Marlene, I let Mom and Jodine tell us their stories. I know your story goes back just as far. So give us a little bit of an idea of how you got involved in this.
Oh, hi, Charity. It's really nice to be here with Jodine and Linda.
Hello, Marlene.
Hi, Marlene.
Hi. Yes, we do go back a long, long ways. Mm-hmm. Well, I got started because my husband worked for the Iowa Conservation Commission, and he still works for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources as a wildlife biologist. At that time, he was managing the old wildlife exhibit at the Ledges State Park, and people would drop off animals to him, orphaned raccoons, injured owls, you name it, and he would bring them home to me. I had no idea what to do with them. I never had raised anything. He, being from a farm, thought he could raise everything, so we quickly found out that wasn't the case, because raising wild animals certainly isn't like raising lambs and calves and piglets and things, although I have now done that too, Linda. So, he went to the first National Wildlife Rehabilitators Association symposium in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, came back with so much information, I told him, you are never going to that without me again. And that's what happened. I went to the second one, and then I was so encouraged by what I was hearing that I continued to go to those symposia nearly every year since, and that's been 30-some years now, and served on that board for about 6 years.
And we heard from Terry a few minutes ago, and I can't help but notice that I'm talking to three women who are in a similar age cohort. And mm-hmm. Jodine, I know you're looking at retirement soon.
That's right.
Marlene, you have a vision for the future. And I mean, clearly there's a need for more wildlife rehabilitators. So tell us a little bit about your vision with the Iowa Wildlife Center.
Well, several years ago, someone came to me and said, Marlene, we think you're the person to do this. Would you, if we gave you a nice donation, start something here in Iowa that could be that vision for the future for wildlife rehabilitation. And I thought about it for 6 long months because I was happily working at Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation and could easily have finished my career there. And then I thought, this is something I've always wanted to do. I've always been an at-home rehabilitator, volunteer for all these years, and I thought, this is a barn door opening. This is not just a little walk-through door. This is a barn door that's opening, and if I don't walk through it, I'll regret it. And so I phased out my position at Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. They actually helped me through the initial process of purchasing and protecting the land, And here we are. So the vision that we set up, the mission of the Iowa Wildlife Center, is to provide professional wildlife rehabilitation services for Central Iowa and beyond, to provide wildlife assistance skills training. So talking about what Terry was mentioning, Linda said that we're losing our wildlife rehabilitators. We're not getting an influx of new rehabilitators anymore. So we want to be able to train new rehabilitators that are interested in the field. And then the third prong of our mission is providing conservation education for the public.
And as I mentioned, you broke ground in 2011. This is a very big project. Are you fully operational?
Oh, heavens. I don't know why I started this at this point in my life, but I've
wondered that, too.
I know. There is sanity and there is insanity, right? So, no, we incorporated in 2011. I remember putting the green gate up on our land. We have our initial donation allowed us to buy 75 acres of property in near the Des Moines River over in Boone County. It's a wonderful piece. It's nearly connected. It is connected to much protected land, whether it's private land that's protected by conservation easement or the state property. And so we started putting up our first building, I think, back in 2011. We're still working on that first building because it's a volunteer endeavor largely. So that's one of the big projects we want to finish up this summer is raising the funds to, we've got all the siting out there. Things are ready to finish enclosing it. So getting the siding and windows on and designing and installing the electrical and mechanical system and insulating and building the interior spaces and things, that needs to come this summer. So that's one of the big projects ahead of us.
And Marlene, you've talked about your history, but what drives you? Why leave a job that was fairly comfortable and take on a project like this at this point in your life?
Well, I always sort of do things backwards because I was an English major back in the early 70s, and I dropped out to live life, got married, had children, became this volunteer, volunteered for a lot of organizations. And then I thought, you know something, this is my life. You know, this is, I guess, what I was born for. And so I went back to school. I went back to college here at Iowa State and finished with a double major in fisheries and wildlife biology and environmental studies. And that was back in the mid-80s. So now I'm like, okay, so now this came after I worked at Iowa Natural Heritage. This came, I don't know, it just seemed, Charity, like it was something I just had to do. Sometimes you can't explain it. I know I had great parents who provided me with, my mother provided me with this nurturing side. My dad provided me with a deep interest in the outdoors through hunting and fishing and such. And so here I am doing what I'm doing.
And we were talking earlier about the importance of each individual creature and how when you look at that in a textbook, it doesn't necessarily add up, although to each rehabilitator, each one of those creatures is very important. To the people who find those creatures and want to help them, each creature is very important. What do you feel is the most important part of your mission?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, the most important part of my mission, I think there are two parts to that, Charity. I think that it certainly is the level of care I provide an individual animal and make sure that it is, you know, cared for in the best way possible and released back to the best place possible. But I also think that it's having one-on-one conversations with people about that animal that they're bringing in. And I can talk to a room full of people and get lots of great comments, but for some reason it's sitting down with a person who bring an animal in and having a conversation with them about why they brought it in and what their role is in this on this earth.
And of course, back when you were a backyard wildlife rehabilitator, you did all those late night feedings and early morning feedings and all of that with the Iowa Wildlife Center. What is your vision for how you meet those needs? If the animal's not in someone's home where someone can just wake up and go take care of them, how do you do it?
With volunteers, and we also plan on having intern housing out on the property. We plan on having a full-time groundskeeper and caretaker of the area. So, you know, the long-range vision is to have on-site to meet those needs with on-site people.
Let's go back to the phones. The number to call to join our conversation is 866-780-9100. And Sean is on the line in Marion. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
This is sometime in the mid-90s. I was taking the trash out, and I noticed this multicolored bird on the ground, and it was having a hard time getting any elevation. And I looked at it again. I recognized it as a kestrel. And I went back in the house, grabbed a box, put some bath towels in the box, and made sure my cat was in the kennel carrier, and came back out and put him in the box because I wasn't going to let him stay out there. We had a problem with stray cats in the neighborhood. And I called the Raptor Center out. They came out and picked him up. And, well, maybe a few months later, I got a call saying, your bird's going to be released. And I tell you something, I went to the release, and here this bird that was having a hard time flying took off like a dream, and it just like brought tears to my eyes. And it's like, wow, you know, it's an experience like I've never experienced before, you know, helping save a bit of wildlife, a bit of Mother Nature. And, you know, if you have an opportunity to save any kind of wildlife, don't pass it up. It's a great feeling.
Oh, Sean, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
That was great.
Thank you.
That was perfect. Our tagline charity is Saving Wild Lives, Wild Land, and the Human Spirit. And so I think that he just said something about the human spirit and what it's like to release something.
Oh, Sean, thanks a lot. And Jodine, is that part of what you do? Do you try to invite people back for the release when an animal's ready to go?
Absolutely. We try to keep people involved every step of the way, and wherever possible, have them at the release so that they can, see that everything come together and let that animal back out into the wild. And it is very gratifying to be able to see that and help those animals and get them to that point and help the people.
That is exciting. And Mom, I know that you not only invite people to releases, but you've done a lot of releases with large groups of children too.
Yes. Oh, the most amazing I ever did, I used to be a counselor at North Cedar School in Cedar Falls, and they found an owl on the playground and called me. And when I went out there to release it later, it was an assembly. The entire school was outside watching it fly away, and that was just absolutely amazing. But I also wanted to say, and I know Jodine and Marlene have had these kinds of experiences too. I had a little girl call me one day, and she said, my boyfriend just brought me a baby raccoon. I know I'm not supposed to have it. Can you help? And I said, as we talked, she said something about when I'd spoken. And I said, well, when was that? She said, well, when I was in third grade, you came to my class. I said, how old are you now? And she said, I'm 26.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So it
so
really
people remember.
It really makes an impression on a lot of people.
Yep.
I know this is the part of the work that you do all the time, and I've tried to talk about some things that you don't always talk about today, but also when people want to take care of an animal themselves, there are a lot of problems with that, right?
There can be, yes.
Yeah, I would agree. There can be injuries or illnesses, all different types of problems that can come about trying to take care of it if you're not really trained or have the support to do that.
Right, and even fundamental knowledge such as baby mammals can't go to the bathroom by themselves, and they will die if you don't help them do that. So I know that that's there's a lot of information to get out there, and everybody thinks, oh, this is so cute, but no, you can't keep them as pets.
They are very cute. You really don't want to keep them as pets.
Right.
Though.
And that goes back to the permitting in Iowa charity because, you know, back, it's been years ago, when Gladys Black, the bird lady of Iowa, was doing wildlife rehabilitation, she was sort of, Linda and I know her from back then, and one of the mentors for the future rehabilitators. And there was no permitting system. Anyone for $5 could send in and get a pseudo permit to take care of a wild animal. And so it was in the, I think it was also in the 80s that I worked with Daryl Howell, the endangered species coordinator for the DNR, and we came up with this apprenticeship system that is currently in existence. Every state has a different system for permitting. Some states still don't really have much of a permitting, but most of them now do have permitting for the rehabilitators. And so we came up with this apprenticeship system, and that hopefully you work with somebody who's been in the profession and knows the standards and of the diets and the caging and everything, and then they teach their apprentice what those standards are, and that apprentice then can go on to get their own permit.
Now, a couple of years ago when we talked about wildlife rehab in the past, I called one of Iowa's longtime wildlife rehabilitators, and she said, no, I don't want to be on the show because I'm trying really hard not to be a rehabilitator anymore because she was getting older and it's very physically taxing as well as costly. And she didn't want people calling her with more animals. But I mean, this is a problem a lot of rehabbers mm-hmm. are running into now. And Marlene, you have this vision with the Iowa Wildlife Center. Mom, what do you think the future looks like?
Help.
Because, of course, you have to have backyard rehabbers in addition to large centers. Mm-hmm.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Help. I don't know. I've thought often. I'm going to be 69 tomorrow. And how do we begin to tail down? Because they do still call us. They still stop by. I've often thought, I've had over 100 interns, and my goal was to come up with somebody who would move in and take over, but young people have to go get jobs, and they get married and have families, and they move away, and that's not happening, and it's not their fault. These are wonderful young people that would love to do this. So it's an issue, and I would like to have a solution.
And may I say something real mm-hmm. quick? That's why, you know, with this center, mm-hmm. we're going to be based. I mean, our foundation will always be volunteers. I'm mm-hmm. sure of that. But the, you know, I think part of it with wildlife rehabilitators, they see themselves as only volunteers. And that's wonderful because I've done that for all these years. But I think that if we don't value ourselves, no one else will. This profession, and it is a profession, I think is worthy of people making a living at it if that's what they choose to do. So, yes, we do need to find a solution, and other people need to realize that we have to know an awful lot to do this properly, and it is worth being paid.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think all of you will like to hear this email from Dawn in Iowa City. She says, thank you for the show today on wildlife rehabilitation. It's such an important topic, especially this time of year. I have been volunteering at the McBride Raptor Project for over 8 years, and I don't know what I would do without it. Performing rehab work is therapy for me as well as the birds. This show has re-inspired me to look into becoming a state-licensed rehabber. So thank you for that.
Good.
But, and Jodine, retirement is coming soon. What does the future look like for the McBride Center?
Well, hopefully we will have a new person in place into the fall. And I've been working with a terrific young man who I think will step up and be able to guide in some fashion. And so we'll hope that things will continue and the support will be there.
Jodine Kinsella, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jodine is program coordinator of the McBride Raptor Project at Lake McBride Nature Center near Seoul. And Marlene Ayersman, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Marlene Ayersman is director of the Iowa Wildlife Center near Boone. And Mom, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Linda Nebbe has been caring for wild animals for 38 years. She's a licensed wildlife rehabilitator with the Blackhawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project in Blackhawk County. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.